Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Comic Chronicle Podcast. I'm your host, Society's Mutant / Metahuman, Dakota Morgan, coming at you today with a special guest because, as you mentioned at the top of the show before the recording, I love his work. I think he's really cool. Seems like a really nice guy, especially on Twitter, too, which is nice to see, and because that's a whole hate thing here. Go ahead and introduce yourself, good man.
Hey, I'm Max Dunbar. Nice to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course, Max. Now, to folks at home here, you do some very interesting work in comics. You want to, like, very quickly kind of go over some of the stuff that you do? Just, like, let people kind of get an idea?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I've done a few different series for a few different publishers. I was lucky enough to do some Dungeons & Dragons comic books, Micronauts, did a comic that was a prequel to the first Gears of War video game. Yeah, that was really fun. Did a little bit of Red Sonja back in the day, and now I'm working on a creator-owned title called Stone Star.
Which we're going to talk about Stone Star, because I didn't get a chance to take a look at it as of yet. I took a look at it, a little bit of it. And I read the premise and everything like that. And it's like, oh, yes. Like, this is, I definitely want to talk about that with you.
Yeah, we're having a lot of fun with it.
Oh, now, you've worked on, like, D&D a little bit here. Now, I got to ask, man, before we go into, like, the whole asking about things here, is I got to ask you on a personal level, do you do D&D? Like, have you ever played? Are you a fan or anything like that?
Yeah. I mean, I haven't played for, you know, as long as, say, the author of the miniseries I worked on, Jim Zub. He's like a lifelong D&D fan, played first edition and everything. I started playing a little bit over a year ago, so actually well after I worked on the comic book. But yeah, I absolutely love it, and it's a super fun way to get together with your friends.
Oh God, yeah, it's... As a fellow D&D fan, I had to stop playing. I've been playing for like the past, I just started about 6-7 months ago.
Oh yeah, sweet.
Oh, weekly. It was weekly. I had to stop though because right now I'm working on a play. So.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, so it's like one of those, I don't have time for rehearsals, and it killed me. I'm like, no!
It's strangely addictive, for sure. Like, when I'm not playing it, I often find myself, like, thinking about, you know, what we're up to in our campaign and, like, characters, and, yeah, it's a really unique gaming experience for me because I've never been one to really play a lot of tabletop RPGs or, you know, pen and paper games in general, so, yeah, I got hit with it and absolutely loving it.
Yeah, it's one of those that it's a game made for creatives. Like, if you're a creative sort of person, or you got at least just a little bit of imagination, oh, go do it, because you're going to have a field that, yes, there's a little bit of rules out there. To anybody who doesn't know Dungeons & Dragons that much, like, it's really not what people sometimes think it is. It's really a good time for everyone to get together. Like, we have a couple beers while we're there, we enjoy ourselves, we create characters, a world. Like, it's really a wonderful time.
Yeah, it lets you sort of customize it as well to your own gaming needs, whether, you know, you want to be, like, hard and fast on the rules, or if you just want a more free-flowing, like, you know, role-playing heavy time with your friends, you can really shift it around and do a little bit of homebrew to it to make it suit your needs. So it's, like, the most perfect game.
Oh, yeah, and it's not like you have to worry about a graphics scene or anything like that, like the graphics and... How the design is done is by your brain. It's what you come up with in your imagination. And it's what's so beautiful about it. Oh.
And you can spend as much money on it as you want. You can get really heavy in the miniatures and, like, you know, the little, you know, say, like, Dwarven Forge. They build some amazing scenery. You can do all that. You can do a mix of that, or you can just go almost purely imagination. So it's really there for everyone, I think.
Oh, God, yeah. And then how is it to be a fan and actually take it to go, like, I've always pictured it, we always talk about it, every session you're in, you always talk about, like, oh, we should make this a show, like, Critical Role's out now and shit.
Totally, yep.
Like, what is it like? Because I'm really curious. How do you make D&D, like, into a comic form? Like, what is it like taking these stories and making them into a comic form of the D&D world? Sort of.
Yeah, so it's really interesting, and I was talking to Jim about that fairly recently, because... Part of it is obviously this, like, fly by the seat of your pants, like, anything can happen adventure. Often, you know, with your friends, it turns into this, like, meandering sort of, you don't know where it's going, and there's no real clear narrative, and then cool things can happen, but they almost feel like, you know, they're happening by chance, and that's part of the fun of the tabletop D&D experience. Is a lot of times you don't know where it's going, and it's not following a traditional sort of storytelling format. So with the comic, you do have to infuse, like, sort of arcs into it. You know, you have, say, 5 issues of a miniseries to tell a beginning, middle, and end. But he also, as a writer, infused a lot of the sort of random crazy moments that can happen, you know, in the middle of combat or in the middle of a story. For instance, there's a part in the first miniseries, because it's been going on for a while, the D&D comic. I've been doing covers for a while, but at the first miniseries, I did the interiors as well. So in that one, they go to this big sort of, you know, high-end, high-society party, and a fight breaks out, and randomly, one of the characters just, like, throws someone through a window, like just tackles them through a window, like unexpectedly. So it completely changes the course of action, and they start fighting over the rooftops, and people are falling, and it's just one of those things where you can imagine if you were in a game, you might say, well, you know, is there, where are the bad guys? Oh, one's in front of a window. Yeah. And you could say, well, yeah, I charge at him and I tackle him through the window. And the DM or, you know, guild, dungeon master basically just has to say, like, oh, wow, okay, well, you know, roll for that. And then it takes you on a completely unexpected turn. So the comic book has those moments in it, but ultimately you do have to tell a cohesive story in a fairly short amount of time. So it's a bit of an adaptation.
Yeah, which is, it sounds like a challenge, but it also sounds like a hell of a good time.
Yeah, it was super fun. The sort of ironic thing was, is at the time I did not play D&D, so
you have no idea.
A fantasy story without really appreciating all these small fine touches that Jim was putting into it to make it feel more like a D&D story, and of course it, you know, using the classic D&D spells and characters and stuff. So looking back on it, I definitely get more out of it now than I did at the time, even though at the time I had a great time doing it.
Which is the wonderful time, which is what you want when you're working in the comics, right? Like, it's, when you're doing it, you want to have that good time. You want to enjoy yourself and whatnot. Like,
absolutely, yeah. Oh, I mean, like, comics is ultimately a commercial art form, and as a comic book artist, especially when you start off, you can find yourself working on projects that you may or may not be especially passionate about. You know, you have to pay your bills, and just getting to draw for a living is a huge privilege. But I've been really lucky in all the projects that I've worked on since the beginning. I've been able to find something within them that I really enjoyed, and D&D in particular was one that just basically start to finish, I just absolutely loved it, because even though I wasn't experienced in D&D, I still love the sort of medieval fantasy subject matter. That's always something I've absolutely loved.
Which is amazing. Like, that's wonderful to know, because I always mention on the show to everybody really who's a fan and actually can bring it to the books, because it shows. Like, I always say, I should make it a fucking t-shirt at this point, that fans should be in charge of this stuff. Like, fans should be in charge of, like, comics, and, like, if it's built by fans, it's made for fans, by fans.
Absolutely, and I think that's something that a lot of people can forget, is ultimately, no one really gets into comics unless they're a fan. So, I mean, for the most part, I think creators working in comics are all fans of the subject matter in one form or another. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you might be on a book that you're not a massive fan of for one reason or another, but I think for the most part people are big fans, so it's always a thrill to work on something you're a fan of.
Hell yeah. Oh yeah, because you get to bring that little flavor to it, that flavor, that taste to it of, I know it's kind of weird to mention that, but comics, but that little version of it that's really wonderful, and it is different from the rest, you know, because everyone's different when they work in it, which is truly wonderful to see.
Totally, yeah. Bringing your own voice, whether artistically, like, you know, through the line art or the colors, you know, if you're a color artist or if you're a writer, if you can bring something to the table that's a little bit new or unique, or as a fan with your own special voice, it's always a good thing, I think.
Hell yeah. Now, I'm curious about this is, what? Let's go back in time for a little bit. I want to visit a younger Max. Like, you as a younger kid or teenager, whenever it was, because I always like to kind of like figure this stuff out, people. This is good to know where the origin stories are for folks. what was it that got you into art? Like, what got it into creating and all that? Like, what was it? Like, was there a movie, a show? Was it a comic? Like, what got you to where you are?
Yeah, I mean, I've been drawing for such a long time that it's probably before I actually can remember. I think ultimately my parents are to thank for that, because they, my mom especially, is a very artistic person, and really wanted me to have access to, you know, all the paper and pencil crayons and pencils and all that stuff. Like, my parents weren't big on coloring books even, because they were like, you know, you should draw your own stuff if you want. I was just drawing from a super early age, and comic books were always something that I really loved. You know, I read, like, a lot. I grew up in the 90s, so, you know, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, like, ooh, animated show comic book, like, not even the original, you know, Kevin Eastman comic, but, like, the adaptations done of the TV show, because I loved the TV show so much when I was a little kid. Mm. So I would read those, you know, Archie comics. My dad had a massive Superman, Silver Age Superman collection. So I got access to a lot of cool stuff. But yeah, so the drawing part of it was really, like, I would just draw anything. I love drawing animals, you know, crazy sort of medieval stuff, like knights in armor, from before I can remember, really.
Mm. So fantasy's always been with you, like, you're always with the fantasy. Like, fantasy is kind of like your main go-to?
Yeah, I mean, like, I love... Superheroes came later in my life, still very early, probably when I was, you know, about 8 years old, I became obsessed with superheroes. But before that, for some reason, you know, I was just always into this sort of, you know, knights and dragons and all that stuff. So, you know, at this point, I feel incredibly lucky to be able to work on that type of stuff. Yeah. But yeah, that was sort of in the beginning of my creative DNA, was all that type of thing.
Which is, I think, a good place to start, because when it comes to fantasy, it's basically the ultimate sandbox. You can do, well, you got a little bit of toys in there, but you can do whatever the hell you want.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there is the most broad template ever, and even that can be messed around with. You know, the idea that magic... or these, you know, incredible creatures exist. Beyond that, it can really be interpreted however people want. So, yeah, it's amazing. There's really no way that you can draw something and people say, well, that's not proper fantasy, in my opinion. I think that you can really go any direction you want with it.
Yeah, it's true. You can really do whatever you want with anything. Yeah. You could, like, have a serious type of medieval time here where there's, like, no dragons or anything like that, or you could, and it's, like, all politics, or you could have, like, a Game of Thrones-esque thing. You could have D&D, like, D&D itself is, like, the medieval thing, so you could do a D&D sort of medieval time. You could do whatever you want, and that's why I think it's, like, fantasy is the ultimate type of thing to do. And then you moved into superheroes, and, I mean, you worked on Gears of War, which is fucking killer, and how, like, were you a fan of Gears of War? Did you know about it? Because that's it was super popular. Yeah. Died down and then came back and is kind of dying down again.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool because we're right on the cusp, hopefully, of this, you know, brand new game, which will be really, hopefully, really awesome. It looks very cool to me. But the funny thing is, yeah, I've never really played Gears of War. I've never owned an Xbox, and, you know, it being an Xbox exclusive. But I went, when I was in college, sort of in after 2005, around 2007, I believe that's when the first Gears of War was sort of starting to come out. I might be wrong about that, but it's around that time. And I remember because I was going into game art and design. That's what I was going to college for. And I remember being obsessed with the look of Gears of War. So I had, like, you know, a big Gears of War art book, and I went through looking at, you know, the various character models and texture maps and, you know, the various techniques they were using, bump mapping, all that stuff was a real groundbreaking game for a lot of artistic techniques, and it was something I was fascinated with. And so from that perspective, from like a artistic perspective, I loved the Gears of War franchise, but funnily enough, never actually really played it. I think I played it once before I actually got to work on the comic book. But again, at its core, it's a really cool story with some super unique, interesting characters and environments. So I, again, was like jumping into a world that looked like it'd be really fun to play around in, and it absolutely was.
Hell yeah. I mean, you got aliens in the sense there. You got a gun. Their main gun has a chainsaw on it. I mean, come.
It's about as metal as it gets.
And, yeah. And you know, gory. They don't...
crazy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's an absolute crazy fucking world. That's why I think people love about Gears of War, is because you want a heavy metal experience that you can't get these days, that would be from 2008 to 2000 whatever. Yeah. Like, you want that, or like a 90s sort of thing, and you want gore, you want a good story, you want good characters, aliens, Gears of War. If we didn't just sell it there, then I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's one of those things where, like, we really couldn't go too over the top in the comic book, which is always really fun. Especially, you know, I've gotten to do both, like, more family-friendly, kid-centric stuff. The D&D books are, you know, very all ages, not a lot of gore, no swearing. But then the Gears of War thing was, like, the polar opposite. There was, like, just add more blood. Like, there was swearing, there was crazy action sequences, people getting like stabbed through the face and all sorts of stuff. So yeah, I mean, it's really fun to let loose and like just go crazy on the page for stuff like that. So it was a really fun project to work on.
Do you listen to music while you work?
Yeah, I kind of cycle through some different stuff. Mostly I try and stick to audio stuff. So yeah, like music, podcasts, like Critical Role, I mentioned before, is huge because A, I love D&D, and B, like they just got so much content. Like,
that's true.
When I found the first campaign, they were, I guess, 3/4 of the way through it probably at that time. And I was like, wait a second, they put out 4 hours, 4+ hours of fresh, like, great, fun, super cool content every week. This is like a comic artist dream come true, because I can't tell you how many, like, TV shows I've gone through, like, listening to, you know, how many documentaries I've listened to. Like, I'm just at the table like 8 to 12 hours a day, at least 5 days a week. So you can go through a lot of stuff when you're listening to it. You know, for the past, I don't know, like 7 years. So yeah, having something that is getting updated that frequently is fantastic. So definitely Critical Role is a big one. Audiobooks, movies and TV, but only ones that I can listen to, because I'm not able to watch anything while I'm drawing.
I mean, it makes sense. You don't want to take away from it and look away from what you're working on. At that.
Yeah, it would take me way longer because I'd keep getting distracted and, like, looking up. So you definitely want to stay focused. You know, it's a long enough day anyways. I don't really need an extra amount of distraction to lengthen the day out.
Oh, yeah. I agree so much with that, because there's every now and then I get a writing job down the pipeline. And they're like, hey, we want you to write this. And people are like, well, you just did music. Like, no, I like to have something kind of creative on. Like, I'm with you on that. Like, I haven't started Critical Role with it. I wonder how that would work. But I'll have, like, a TV show on I listen to. We don't really look up at all or anything like that. Just kind of, like, focus on what you're doing. But it helps get the juices flowing. I think it really does.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think the writing thing would be even harder than drawing when it comes to the sort of multitasking. Because I find, like, when I'm doing layouts and stuff where I really have to think about, you know, where things are going to go on the page or interpreting the script, I really can't listen to too much. Like, music is good for that. It can kind of be pushed way into the background of, you know, in my mind. But then once I'm actually working on the page itself, that's fairly mindless, because all the hard work has sort of been done. It's more making it look nice. So that's when I can really listen to, you know, podcasts, Critical Role, audiobooks, movies, television, that type of thing. So yeah, it's a mix of all of those things in my sort of day-to-day.
Yeah, you always got to have the assistance, I think. As of to fellow creators out there listening, which there's a lot. There's a lot of people in the comic business and the movie business who listen to the show.
Fantastic.
You guys got to really, like, just think, oh, we just sit down and work in the silence. Very, very few people can do that. It's incredibly rare. You got to have those creative assistants with you, like, something creative-based.
By your mom with something. Like, otherwise, it would just, I don't know, be super boring if I was just sort of staring at a page in silence all day.
Oh, hell yeah. You can't do it. Just because then your mind starts wandering. You start thinking of, like, off stuff you don't want to be thinking about. It's like, ooh, yeah. No, like, it takes away.
It's sort of like just, you know, staring at a wall for, you know, 5 to 8 hours a day. You need something to sort of entertain you as you go. So, yeah, sure. Definitely a huge fan of listening to all that type of stuff.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's going to be kind of funny. Like, everyone's going to be like, these guys must really like Critical Role. Yes, we do.
Yeah, I'm an unabashedly huge fan of it. I don't think you could listen to something for as long as I've listened to that show and not just become a huge fan, because the entire thing is just such a fun way to experience D&D, and they're all, you know, funny and great storytellers, so I really recommend it to anyone, even if you're not a D&D fan, because it's kind of like listening to, you know, a radio play that's being done live, so it's full of, you know, hilarious mistakes, and the characters themselves get surprised by things, and they're all, you know, they all seem to be friends, so they have that sort of charisma with each other that is very easy to listen to and very entertaining.
It's true. Oh, it's true. You can hours and hours of it. Now,
yeah, literally, like, probably hundreds and hundreds of hours of it by now, so, yeah. Pretty crazy.
If they don't sponsor you or anything like that, like, come on.
They don't sponsor me at all. It's funny because, like, before this interview, I was working on a page and Critical Role was on. So, yeah, it's a big part of my sort of weekly, my weekly routine. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, I do want to talk about Stone Star, but before I talk about that, is I have to ask, man. You went and tackled a very interesting series, one that Marvel, I am a huge fan of, and one that Marvel is really spearheading and whatnot, too, is Champions.
Yeah.
Yeah, how is that? Because that's such a culturally relevant book. It's really wonderfully done, and it's incredibly well written, drawn all the time. How was it, like, tackling that project?
Yeah, it was, like, a dream come true, really, because, again, ever since I discovered superheroes, sort of the Marvel superheroes, I should say, back when I was around 8 years old, it was the X-Men, and then I got really into, like, just Marvel superheroes in general, and so Marvel has always been sort of a huge goal of mine. I've always wanted to work for them, it just came about that my schedule was opening up. I was coming off of one book, and a project that I was all lined up for fell through, as these things happen sometimes.
Okay.
And so I all of a sudden found myself with, like, oh, I don't actually know what I'll be doing for the next few months. And as if on cue, Jim Zub, who I had worked with on Dungeons & Dragons, and who is now, you know, kicking ass at Marvel on multiple titles, contacted me sort of out of the blue and was like, dude, do you have anything coming up like in like 2 weeks? And I was like, no. And he said, quickly draw all the champions for me. I need to send it to the editors at Marvel to prove that you can draw teenagers, because funnily enough, I guess I don't draw teenagers that much, or teen characters. I tend to, you know, when I'm doing stuff for myself, tend to draw, I don't know, like grizzled old fighters and stuff. And my previous few comics had been, you know, Gears of War, which there's no teens in that. It was all monsters and stuff.
So,
I did that. It was like a bit of a tryout, which is super common to do, especially when you haven't worked for a publisher before. So I did a sketch of all the champions, and I sent it over to Jim, and he sent it over to the folks at Marvel. And he was like, yeah, you're in for three issues. The champions are going to be going to Weird World, so it's going to be like champions, Marvel superheroes by way of a fantasy medieval setting. And I was like, this is the most perfect combination I could possibly think of.
Yeah, like, that is like common. It's combining everything you love. You're like, yes.
I mean, like, talk about a lucky intro into superhero comics. So, yeah, they liked the sketches I did enough to hire me. And it was kind of a cool transition because on issue 25, Sean Isaacs, who was the artist on Champions up until that point, who had been doing, like, a phenomenal job. I am a massive fan of his. He handled the first eight pages. And when the champions got sent to Weird World, and Riri Williams wakes up sort of after there's a panel of black, and then she wakes up in Weird World, it was me taking over. And, you know, Nolan Woodard was doing colors, so we had our own sort of visual look to it. And it was sort of like this intro into it where, you know, you wake up in Weird World and I get to take over. So then for the next, you know, that issue and the next two, it was just crazy fantasy, superhero adventure stuff. And it was an absolute blast.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that's like my childhood in one book.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was crazy. I kind of had to pinch myself every time, you know, and I got to draw like Miles Morales, but him as like a, you know, Spider-Man by way of, like, a rogue-type character. So he had, like, a cloak, some knives and stuff. It was super fun.
Who is your favorite Champions character? Because everyone's at least got one.
Yeah, who do you think?
What you got? Like, there's a lot of team members now, so there is that.
Yeah, there are tons. I mean, my favorite new one, as a Canadian, has to be Snowguard, because I think she's a great character. I got to draw her doing some super cool stuff that Jim had written into the script, because she can transform, and she's got like the spirit of the North sort of going through her, so she can transform into various different animals and combinations of animals, which I think is super cool.
Yeah, that's pretty right.
So she can transform into like this sort of albino werewolf with like stag horns coming out of its head. So that was like a blast, just an absolute blast to draw. And then otherwise, I mean, I really like Miles Morales. I think, you know, getting to draw him was so cool because he's such, at this point, even though he hasn't been around for that long of a time, has already become an iconic character. So drawing him just felt like a pinch me moment.
True. And yeah. I personally love Ms. Marvel. I think she's like, she's my top five champion since the beginning of this series. Like,
she's great.
Oh, she's so wonderful. That's a character who, I know she's got cartoons and whatnot, but I think she'd be really well. Like, I think Champions would be really, really good. And do we see a Champions movie in the future?
I mean, I certainly hope so. Yeah. I gotta imagine that with the way that the movies have been so successful, and that the old guard of the Avengers is, you know, if the movies are anything to go by, and what we hear in the background, you gotta imagine that they've done their films and they're gonna transition to a new slate of characters at some point. Mm-hmm. I doubt that they're gonna try and, you know, one up a Robert Downey Jr. performance against Iron Man. I mean, I have no idea, but I can't imagine that they would do that. So, I mean, you're going to have to explore some other characters. And they are, from the looks of it, from everything I read online, I have no insight into it, but, you know, it looks like the Fox merger or acquisition hopefully will give them a whole slate of new characters to play with. But also, you've got these great teen characters that could scratch a whole new itch for people, give you a whole different type of superhero movie. So yeah, fingers crossed that the Champions make it into the movies.
Oh yeah,
because I would see those characters.
Even like, you could even do Champions if you're looking for it. Is I think you could do them on the Disney streaming service. You know, you totally could easily do that. Live action, hopefully, and it could be on that streaming service thing. So you do whatever you want. It's Disney streaming service, so it's probably not going to be like a Netflix style or like a Warner Brothers style thing. It's not gonna be like, and Disney gone dark. No.
No, and I don't know. The Champions could probably sort of be anywhere from very lighthearted to, you know, serious drama, but I think somewhere in the middle of those two things would probably be best.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many dark things on television, and the characters are fairly uplifting.
It's true.
So, and, you know, with the success of Into the Spider-Verse, you know, and showing us that type of movie with so much heart behind it can do so well, I think the Champions are all very inspiring characters. So, yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. I think they would work really well on sort of a streaming television experience,
sure. Oh, hell yeah. Well, let's hope. Fingers crossed for that one, because that would be bloody amazing. Yeah,
absolutely.
Now, yeah, because the fun part is Stone Star, man. Now, yeah. This comes the part where you sell your book. No.
No, but it's been pretty crazy the past couple weeks, because, I mean, we didn't tell anyone what we were doing.
How did you do that? Like, how did you keep such a thing a secret?
Yeah, well, it's one of those things that, so, after Champions, Jim and I really wanted to work together again, and we've known each other for a really long time. We've worked together a few times, and we always have an absolute blast. So, we're like, you know, let's try something, and he said, well, do you want to give creator-owned a go? And I was like, yeah, I've always wanted to do a creator-owned book where we essentially come up with the idea together, and we build the world together, and we both have a stake in it. And the Comixology folks had been wanting to work with Jim for a while, and he had been wanting to work with them, and it just sort of lined up to be this opportunity that, you know, we both, Jim and I and everyone else on the team, absolutely loves print comics. However, you know, I think there's room for all different sorts of delivery methods. Mm-hmm. And one of the strengths of the digital exclusivity is that you don't really need to do previews. Or at least we were seeing, like, let's try not doing the sort of previews, the sort of endless hype cycle that comic books can find themselves in, where you have to announce a book and get everyone all excited about it, like, months and months before it's actually available to read.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the logic being that a lot of times the excitement reaches this fever pitch, but then dies down, and you kind of have to maintain it and keep people going. And, you know, people hate being sold to generally, you know, the endless promotional tweets, the endless promotional Instagram posts, people kind of get glassy-eyed too.
Yeah.
So we were, you know, we're saying, let's just drop it. Like, let's just announce it and then say, and it's available right now. I mean, other things have done that. I know Netflix has done that with a few series.
You kind of pulled the J.J. Abrams.
Yeah, I mean, kind of. It's a platform that allows you to at least try that.
Yeah.
So we thought, you know, let's give it a go. And so far, the response has been really strong, and people have, I think, really enjoyed the idea of, I just heard about this, I can now immediately check it out. And, you know, if the person has a even like an Amazon Prime, they can check it out as part of that, so they don't have to pay any extra. It's free to them.
Hmm.
Kindle Limited, like, you, it's very accessible. So we're hoping that lots of people check it out, and, you know, you have the ability to just sort of check out the first few pages, and if it captures you, you can get it, and if not, you know, you can try something else. But we're hoping that it grabs people.
Yeah, and it's with it being digital, you can grab it anytime. You know, as long as you don't have a busy schedule. I mean, I've been running my head cut off today, but...
Sure, like, but yeah, I mean, if you say you have a few minutes before you, you know, crash out and fall asleep, you can say, oh, you know what, why don't I start reading this, and then I'll finish reading it tomorrow. And you can just grab it whenever you want. And it looks like it's going to be print on demand, the collected trade, when it's all finished.
Ooh.
So if people are saying, well, I need to hold it in my hands, I want an actual book, that'll be an option to people as well to order directly. So it's the best of both worlds.
Hell yeah. Well, we've been talking about it for a second here, but people probably like, what the hell is it? Try to give a good, like, I'm not saying short, but try to give, like, a really good, storyline synopsis of what it is. Like, what is it really that you guys have brought to the table with this? Because I love the idea. The idea and the concept of this dropping it is beautiful. Because it's like, here it is. Like, oh, shit.
Yeah, yeah. So, Stone Star is a space fantasy set on a roving gladiatorial arena that's built into an asteroid. So, it visits planet to planet. The people of those planets board this gigantic sports arena and watch all sorts of crazy monsters and aliens and robots fight. Mm-hmm. The story follows Dale, who is a young sort of 16-ish resident of the asteroid. The asteroid has this whole support system. Essentially, those who, you know, they might work in a restaurant on the asteroid, or they might be a garbage man. He happens to be a thief, so he steals, you know, technological parts from various different people, and he gets swept into the whole sort of shady underground of the way that the arena is acquiring combatants, sometimes against their will. So he finds himself caught up in this.
Badass. And huh, that's leaving me at a loss for words at that one, because it sounds really fucking cool.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that no one told Jim or I what to write or draw when we started with it. We could have gone any direction, so it's one of those things that we're both like, well, what would be really, really fun for us to do and hopefully for other people to read? So, yeah, we're like, you know, fighting monsters, in a space setting, so they can be from, you know, 1,000 different planets. This thing travels around, so it's picking up people from all over the place. There's a bustling, you know, economy, all sorts of fun environments to draw, marketplaces and slums and, you know, the high-end sort of, high-end capitalism of it. Yeah. And, it's really... You can go any direction with it, and you can do anything you want with it. So we're having an absolute blast.
Where do you come up with such an idea for this thing? Like, what was it?
The genesis of the idea was Jim's. He had been kicking it around in his head for a long time. I think whenever he gets a cool idea for a comic, he just sort of, you know, writes it down, documents it, saves it until a time comes that he might have an artist for it or might have a platform for it. So he basically had the log line of, you know, this roving asteroid that travels from place to place, and people board it, and then people watch people fight. And so he's like, is that something you'd be interested in? And I was like, yeah, that sounds amazing. Yeah. So ultimately, beyond that, he didn't really give me much direction in terms of the look of the world. He said, you know, I want it to look used. It's not pristine. Mm-hmm. Sort of a Star Wars-esque used future look. Beyond that, just let me go crazy with the designs. You know, it was very inspiring, so I just started shelling out designs and concept art, and the stuff that I was doing started to inform the way that he started writing the characters. So it was very collaborative in that way. Mm-hmm. A lot of times you as an artist have a lot done for you writing wise before you start drawing. They might say, you know, character XYZ is this way, and you draw them that way, and you know they're going to speak a certain way. But in this case, because we were both working on it from such an early standpoint, the characters evolved as I worked on them. So we really came up with the voice of the characters together, and abilities and the way the characters move throughout the world. All was very collaborative. So an incredibly fun experience.
It sounds like it. And it sounds like teamwork makes a dream work for this one especially.
Totally. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
It sounds like you guys are really enjoying yourselves, and I hope it goes on for a while, because it sounds really cool, and I like really want. If I didn't have rehearsal tonight, it would be red.
No, and it's five issues to start off with, and I definitely have to give a shout out to the other people that are working on it because they're contributing a huge amount. We're working with Espen Grutenjern, who is doing the colors, and it's mind blowing every time I get a page back because. Again, so much of this is world building. Mm-hmm. So much of this is creating, hopefully, really cool and amazing environments. And I'm doing a certain percentage of that visually, but he is definitely contributing a huge amount of heavy lifting and creating such incredible atmospheres that every time I get a page back from him, it's like he's finishing a thought and creating something better than I ever could have thought. So it's really, really fun working with someone like that because, again, it's like just it's such a cool experience to see the stuff come to life under his talent. And Marshall Dillon is doing the letters, and Jim and him talked about, you know, the best way to sort of get this high energy, high adventure style across, and the things he's doing on letters are absolutely incredible. He's adding so much character and old school sort of comic book fun to the comic and a lot of storytelling through the actual lettering choices he's making. So again, it's like seeing him work on a page. It like buttons it up and completes it and makes it an actual real comic book when he's worked on it. And then Tim Daniel did that awesome Stone Star logo that I think is, you know, really eye-catching and iconic and unique and kind of captures the whole essence of the story within the logo, which is really hard to do, but you did an amazing job with it.
Yeah, it's like all this hard work is really showing through in what you guys have put out there.
And thank you. It's great to hear.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, I was able to check out a little bit of it, but not much of it. And like I checked out just a tad bit, but that tad bit has got me hooked. Like it's really got it hooked in there. And this is not no bullshit for anyone home. He's like, oh, whatever. It's like, no, this is honest truth because I'm a full supporter of indie books. Like,
sweet.
Oh, yeah. I love DC Marvel. We talk a lot of people from DC Marvel, but I love indie books and I support 100%. And I support you guys in this one. Like, Stone Star?
Thank you.
Oh, hell yeah.
That's awesome. I love indie books because you can see a massive variety of different stories within them. So not everyone loves, I mean, like I love superheroes, but not everyone wants to read superheroes all the time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you want a dose of sci-fi fantasy, then, you know, I hope this book can scratch that itch.
And one last time, man, where can I find it at?
So it's on Comixology.com. It's Comixology Unlimited. You can get it through Amazon. You can get it through your Kindle Unlimited. Yeah, basically right now it's exclusively online, so you would be reading it digitally, but in the future you will be able to order it off of Amazon.com. I believe Amazon.com exclusively, not unfortunately the international sites for now or when it first comes out in several months as a trade paperback print on demand. So yeah, if you're someone that's you know, says, well, I only read collected editions or I only read you know, actual physical copies, it will be available to you as well in that format.
Good shit, man. Good.
Yeah, like, and we're really excited about it.
Congratulations on it. I just want to tell you congrats because
thank you so much.
Oh yeah, and you guys get it in printed too, like people are like, yeah. Oh, they can get it online. I could do that. Like, okay, for one, good fucking luck. And two, it's tough. And it's a tough thing to do. And especially get your own book out there. It's not as easy as people think it may be. And then to get it printed, too, on Amazon? Like, mind-blowing.
Yeah, no, it's a very competitive space for sure. Yeah. I feel very lucky that that I get to work with the people that I do get to work with because that raises its profile a significant amount. Jim is really excited about the book. The people at Comixology are really excited. And yeah, I'm having a blast. So I hope that people enjoy it. And I hope that we get to continue making it, whether it's, you know, directly after this, or, you know, if we return to it for a sequel at a bit of a later date, you know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, well, I'm giving full support on it, man. It's just like...
Thank you so much. Of course. Thank you. It's one of those things where if people do enjoy it, their support will definitely help towards making more of them.
Sure. It's amazing to me the world that we can be in where we get to do this sort of thing, you know? Like we talked about the beginning, way before the previous recording this, we live in this world where we get to create, and you get to create too and do it, and, you know, and I can't wait to see what else you can bring in down the road, because you're a good guy. Like, it's nice to know there's fun people working behind these books, because you hear stories of, like, this guy's a dick, or she's terrible, or whatever it is. No.
No, totally. Well, you know what? I ultimately am so appreciative of the fans, the people that who support comics, who buy comics and read them, that... I'm very humbled anytime anyone comes up to me and says they enjoy my book. I never want to get jaded to that or take it for granted. So I am genuinely thankful anytime I get to interact with someone who's a reader of comics that enjoys my work. So, yeah, you know, if people enjoy this, hit us up on Twitter. Let us know what you think of it. I will thank you personally, and I appreciate every single person who does it.
Folks, check him out. Make sure you do it. Make sure you check out Stone Star, and because it's glorious. And Max's work here is glorious. I don't like the bullshit on the show. It's complete honesty. I mean, in my love life, you can ask my girlfriend. She's like, he's way honest.
That's super nice of you to say, and I really, really do appreciate it.
Of course, man. Now, I'm curious because everybody gives some different versions of this. And I like to help inspire people in the show because people have done a bunch of stuff because of the show before, whether get into what they want to do, writing, artists. What can, like, you give a few words to fellow artists out there who maybe are, like, trying to take that step forward or people who are working hard right now and just don't know where to go? Like,
sure. Yeah, absolutely. If you want to get into comic books in particular for drawing, it's one of those things where at first you have to put in a huge amount of work for very little payoff, it seems. Unless you're incredibly lucky or, you know, insanely talented right off the bat and managed to land a really awesome job. It was one of those things where I had to treat it, the act of breaking into comics, like a second job on top of my day job, which at the time I was working in retail. And I was like, you know, I really want to break into comics. So I'd say, you know, do a combination of things. Keep it fresh so you don't get too bogged down by the endless, you know, studying of drawing. But do some studying. I would recommend several books that people can check out that I read and found really useful. The classic is How to Draw Comics, The Marvel Way. Stan wrote it. Johnny Buscema drew it, and it's just, you know, it's sort of like the Bible of how to do comic book art. A lot of sort of priceless lessons are in it. And then I would say find some other anatomy books. I really like George Bridgman. I think that his style lends itself really well to comic books while still being a great realistic resource for drawing people. Mm-hmm. And beyond that, draw everything, because comics is one of the more unique art forms where any day you might have to draw, you know, a horse, a car from a different angle, multiple angles, buildings. So familiarize yourself with the concept that everything is just shapes in perspective. You can break down things into simple shapes, practice perspective, practice drawing in general, and then also, if you have time, draw for fun, because I think it's really important to draw fan art, draw your own characters, put them online, get everyone to see them as much as you can without bothering people, because another thing is it's really tempting to tweet at people all the time and say, you know, hey, check out my work, check out my work. A lot of people don't like that. I don't mind it, but a lot of people don't like it so much, and so just allow your audience to grow naturally. It does take a while, but it does happen. I remember on Twitter years ago, you know, I was struggling to get, you know, 100 people to follow me. But you slow and steady, you start to build up momentum, and just keep at it. And if you really love and really want to do it, you will. You'll keep at it because persistence is a huge part of the comic book game. So you just have to keep trying.
Yeah, and don't lose faith, folks. Like, that's a really beautiful way to end this show, is those words right there, Max, because just keep going. You gotta just keep going, you know?
Keep going, because every drawing you do gets you a little bit closer to getting to perhaps the skill level that you need, because practice, muscle memory is a huge, huge part of it, so just keep practicing.
And you don't want to lose, I'll add in that fact of, make sure you don't lose the fact of, you're not doing this to be like, oh, work. You're doing this because you love it, because you find it fun. Don't lose that motivation. Don't lose that little childhood piece of you in there. I like to tell people that, too. Just keep it with you.
Yeah. Cool. Absolutely.
Man. Oh, that's amazing. That is a brilliant way to put the end of the show. And so I got to ask, man, where can people find you at? Because I definitely like plugging you away. Like plugging people away and whatnot. Where can they find you?
Shit, that. Thank you. The primary places that I tend to post are on Twitter, so I'm at Max_Dunbar, and the same on Instagram. Those are the two places that I post the most. I do a website where I put pages and also my convention schedule, which is max-dunbar.com. Beyond that, you know, like DeviantArt once in a while, but I'd say Twitter, Instagram are my two primary.
Hey, there we go. All right, folks, make sure you guys are sure to check him out on there. It's well worth it. Oh, it's fun. Funny post some fun stuff on there. And also, be sure to check out Stone Star on Comixology, because, yes. Like, really, folks, check it out. And if you guys want to stay tuned for everything on the Comic Chronicle podcast, you can follow us at Real FanCorp on Twitter and Instagram, FanCorp Network on Facebook and YouTube. And also, you want to follow me, I'm at Dakota_Morgan97 on Instagram. And at DakotaMorgan3 on Twitter, if you want to follow my escapades and doing stuff in comics world, the film, and TV, and all that. So definitely check them out, folks. And Max, any final words for the folks at home?
Final word is thank you so much for having me on the podcast. I had a blast. This was awesome.
Yeah, it's fun to be able to talk to nice folks like yourself, have a good conversation about this stuff here, about stuff we love, and go behind the scenes, which is the point of the show. And it's nice when you're a nice guy. It helps out greatly.
Thank you. Well, likewise. Thank you very much.
Thank you, man. Alrighty. So, folks, at home, make sure you go check it out. Make sure you go check out Stone Star and Comixology, available now to you. And stay classy, everybody.